Welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. We're coming back to you this week after a cracking UFC event last weekend, where the heavyweight king remained on his throne as Stipe Miocic defeated Daniel Cormier by unanimous decision at UFC 252. I'm your host, Jake Jones, and my co-host this week is a man of many talents. All of you MMA fans out there should know who first round management are. These are the guys who represent the likes of Johnny Bones Jones, Jorge Masvidal, and Demetrius Johnson. Well, this man is also signed to them too. It's the one and only Sean Gilley. How you doing, man?
Yes, I'm good, man. I'm glad to be back. I love doing this weekly. I just love it, man. I love it.
So, Sean is currently dealing with a bit of an injury. You've done your ribs in.
Yeah, I've got fractured ribs, man. Training too hard, over training.
Yeah, mate, it happens. These things happen, but obviously we all wish you a speedy recovery. Yeah. So, to start recapping last weekend's event, what did you think of UFC 252?
Oh, like, that event was amazing. It was shame to see Daniel Cormier go on a losing streak, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, he's effectively retired on a loss. But,
yeah,
I mean, I still think there's an ambiguous moment where you think, is he actually gone? I think he might return in the future, but equally, I can see him taking him. So he's actually got a suspension now, I believe, till February because of the eye injury.
Oh, really?
So if he's suspended till February, maybe them 6 months will actually give him time to say, do you know what, I probably won't be coming back. If he's not going to be doing a lot in them 6 months, then I'm not sure if he will return afterwards. We'll just have to see, because as I said, I thought maybe at first he might take 6 months off, as in training for 6 months, and then think, do you know what, I'm going to get back in there.
Yeah.
But with an injury like that, I said, if you're suspended for a while, it's unlikely it's going to happen. But we have to see.
I think that'll play on his head as well, though, that loss. I think any fighter goes through a loss, it plays on your head for a while. And to go out to retire from the loss, he's got to come back and redempt himself, haven't he?
Yeah, we'll have to see, for sure. I mean, what I was happy about is that we had a solid card back on the radar. Because recently I felt a little bit disheartened by the cards. I felt they've lacked a bit of fizz to them all. They just didn't have the calibre of fights that I felt the UFC usually have, which sets them apart from the rest. Yeah. But the UFC 252 event completely turned the tables here, and it offered a great night of fights. Let's start off with a clash of heavyweight titans. And no, we are not talking about the main event. We're talking about JDS versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I mean, what did you think of this bout, man?
Well, we should just go back to last week's podcast.
Yeah.
Basically, I said, like, if he lost that fight to Santos, would that be the end of his career? And he posted that everyone's viewing him because he's training so hard, he just doesn't know why he's not winning.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that post, but that makes a bit of sense. I mean, for me, once more, this wasn't really a surprise, was it? I mean, I think I actually predicted JDS to win in the second round by tiring Jairzinho out. However, I'd never ruled out Jairzinho KOing him. Never, like, that was always a possibility, and that's exactly what happened. I think a massive thing to note as well. So I was genuinely texting my friend seconds before the KO happened, and I said to my friend that if JDS keeps backing off like he keeps doing, carelessly, he's going to get knocked out. And genuinely, 20 seconds later, I'll even post the proof of it, this happened. And my mate even said, you just called it. Because for me, JDS is getting really careless with his striking defence recently. If you check out his losses to Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou, they were reminiscent of what happened on Saturday night. He runs away from his opponent, but he has his guard down. Now, when you're circling away, it's very, very easy to get caught by these guys, as they're so big. As a heavyweight, you have that range. So as if he kind of turns his back on them and does a little jog away, and usually he's getting caught doing it. Now, although that didn't happen with Rozenstruik, he didn't turn his back, but he was definitely backing off and he had his guard down. So for me, that's why he keeps getting caught with these clean punches that are sending him down. It's because he's backing off, but he's not defending himself. It's as if he's not seeing these punches coming, when if I'm honest, it seems quite obvious that they are. It seems like a big heavyweight guy is running towards you. You've got to defend yourself all the time, because I think JDS has a fantastic skill set, but you cannot afford to be careless against these guys who can KO you with one hit.
And the thing is,
in MMA or in boxing, anyone, no matter what weight you are, can KO you with a punch. but especially at heavyweight, even if you're just clipped, that can cause massive issues. It can wobble you, it can knock you down. It might even just, say it's over your eye, it might graze your eye, but then you can't see. At heavyweight, you cannot afford to have your guard down. I mean, another thing to note though, for Biggie Boy, what a fantastic win. He's now got victories over guys like JDS, Arlovski, and Overeem. These are all champions at some stage in their MMA career, so now he's definitely establishing himself as one of the best in the division. And for me, from here, I think he gets the loser of Lewis versus Blades, because he's ranked 5th, he hasn't fought either of them guys, and likely the winner of Lewis and Blades will probably face whoever wins out of Ngannou versus Miocic. So either if he faces Lewis, him and Lewis will just throw bombs at each other and one of the guys likes to get shut out. But if not, he faces a completely new opponent and a new challenge in a guy like Curtis Blades, who obviously Blades offers superior grappling skills, but equally, Blades has only lost by TKO before. He's lost twice and both of them were TKO losses. So once more, Jairzinho would look at that and go, yeah, I can do that to him too.
Yeah,
definitely. 100%. Like you were saying, one punch in that heavyweight division, you're laid out. That's it. You're gone.
No, exactly. And I definitely wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that. Well, so next up, let's talk about our co-main event of the evening. A disappointing fight for me with Chito Vera's victory over Sugar Sean O'Malley. What did you think?
Right, the speculation about this fight. Obviously, everyone's seen Sean O'Malley go on his ankle.
Yeah.
And that, basically, everyone's seen that. Vieira's leg kick demolished his leg and that was it. But obviously everyone's seeing that he went over on his ankle and then Vieira stopped it. And then to be honest, right, I'm going to say this. Herb Dean did a good job in stopping that fight.
I agree. So, I mean, first things first, this was always going to be these two guys' hardest test. And they were both very worthy of that top 15 position that they're fighting for. I don't know if they're 13th ranked or anything, but you know what I mean? They're in the top 10 to 15, yeah. And they're both deserving of being in there. However, this fight didn't go the way I expected or even wanted it to go. I like Chito Vera. I really like him.
Yeah.
But I think he's a great fighter in 135-pound division, and I think he was always going to prove a lot on Saturday night. I really do think that he was always going to offer him a hard fight. But what I did hate, and I absolutely hate this on social media at the moment, is this idea of the Sugar Show being derailed.
Yeah.
What on earth was derailed? For me, I'd get it if he was knocked out clean or if he was exposed massively. Like, say he was dominated horrendously throughout all 3 rounds. But he wasn't. Yeah. He looked comfortable in there until he damaged his foot. And he still looked alright until he himself, fell down. Not Vera didn't push him down or knock him down with a punch. O'Malley fell down, effectively. Yeah. And the thing is, one obvious thing to note is, I don't know if it was Vera checking the kicks, throwing the kicks, or a few slips that O'Malley made that caused the damage. However, when O'Malley went down, Vera wasn't even touching him. He wasn't even pressing him. I think it was that they broke from the clinch and O'Malley fell down. And even fell is an exaggeration. His leg gave way and then Vera capitalised. Yeah. Take nothing away from Vera, he got things done, but by no means was O'Malley derailed here. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't... Vera didn't put him on his arse. Maybe his leg went, and maybe Vera caused that, but overall, it wasn't a direct, say, an uppercut that knocked him down.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a freak moment. And I've seen people try and break down how Vera shot O'Malley's foot. And sometimes it makes sense, this idea of, I think it's the perennial nerve, that if you get kicked in it, it can let your leg go. And
Joel Kavanagh said that, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, that's what John shared. And as I said, I'll find the video for anyone who wants to watch it. And it's interesting. It's about a minute and a half, and it breaks down how that could have happened. And I get that. There's some, I think it was Cejudo versus Demetrius Johnson, where Johnson kicked him in the leg, and then Cejudo literally is fine for about 3-4 seconds, and then his legs start wobbling. So potentially that is what happened. But equally, as you said, we all saw him roll on that foot as well. And you've seen the x-rays now, and there is damage to his foot. So for me, I think potentially as well, yes, maybe a leg kick caused a bit of the problem, but it wasn't just that leg kick. As I said, he rolled on his ankle for sure, and his foot looked bad. I think Vera played the fight smart. He hurt him, and it was right to be stopped, I'll say that as well.
Yeah.
Because O'Malley wasn't going to recover from the rest of the fight because obviously he's actually caused severe damage to his foot. I think there is an image of the fracture and it doesn't look great. So I don't think he was going to recover. But equally, people are saying that, oh, it's all down to Vera causing through these leg kicks. Well, then if he was causing through these leg kicks, which made his legs go wobbly, then maybe throughout the fight he would have recovered. So do you know what I mean? It's got to go either way. And I do think the only thing I would have probably liked to see is maybe the fight could have been called off in the break. One of Vera's elbows did land hard, but I'm not convinced that O'Malley was out. I think there was about 20 seconds left of the fight, so I would have liked to see it get called off in the break of the first round, between the first and second. And yes, it would be classed as a TKO because of the doctor's stoppage, but I did feel that it's going to go down on O'Malley's record, and people will probably replay that idea of him getting the elbow, but I don't think he wasn't out or anything like that.
No, he wasn't,
definitely. Don't get me wrong, I'm not being salty about it. I really like what Vera's done. I think I'd always said he was going to offer him a tough fight, but I just don't like this idea that the Sugar Show was derailed, because for O'Malley, I hope he holds his head high and comes back stronger, because he still looked awesome in there, and he's still one of the biggest talents that this sport has. Because for those who say he was derailed, check yourself. Because if that is getting derailed, then people get derailed at every single event then.
Yeah.
Because I get why someone like Johnny Walker was derailed. Because that was a real tough loss against Corey Anderson, and then he went on to lose again quite badly. So I get that's a derail. But in my opinion, O'Malley's was a freak accident.
Yeah.
Now, just to finalise my big old rant here, people and fans, unfortunately, are jealous and sad. It's like with McGregor. People love to hate on him. Hate on him. People should hate on him for what he does wrong. Fair enough. If he does things that you don't agree with, like the bus incident, fair enough. Like, that's not a good situation. But just to hate on him as a fighter, and a guy, he's a guy who brings fans to this sport. O'Malley's a guy who brings fans to this sport and brings eyes to an event. How can you not respect that? And as I said, the same goes for him. People jump on a bandwagon to either love or hate him. So why not just appreciate him and appreciate the fights that he puts on for us? Because don't get me wrong, I'm not massively crazy about O'Malley. I think he could improve. I actually had Eddie Wineland to beat him. And obviously, I got that very, very wrong.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt that Sean is an asset to this sport, and he will be back. And I hope he does continue his journey to the belt, because there's no derailing here.
No. I know where you're coming from. Like, someone is at his first ever loss, and people are like, we're just derailed Sean O'Malley, like Cody Garbrandt, and that you're not made for war and stuff like that. It's silly. It's first loss.
Yeah. Exactly. And as you said, people are saying that, like, he's been derailed and the Sugar Show's over. Why is it over? I can't understand that. Is it 12-1 now or 13-1?
Yeah.
That's what I mean, man. He's not... He has so much of a bright future ahead of him. And as I said, even if you look at the followers he has and the fans he brings to the sport, if someone's saying that's derailed and that's him over, well, then I don't have respect for that either. Because, as I said, for someone who actually appreciates the sport for what it is, someone like Sean is an asset to have in it. And as I said, if he goes on to maybe lose three now from here, maybe he was derailed. But at this current moment, you can't say that. He didn't get demolished or anything like that. Vera played a brilliant fight and he did really well. But as I said, I can't wait to see O'Malley back in there as well. Definitely. But that is my rant over. We move on to our final fight of UFC 252. It is the fight to end the trilogy, the clash of the heavyweight greatest. Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier. What did you think of this fight, mate?
Oh, why did you say that? Like, that just brings it all down to say at the end of the trilogy, man.
Yeah, no. Mad, isn't it?
It's just eye pokes, man. Oh, the end of the eye pokes, that's better.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the best way to put it as well. I mean, for me, this was a good matchup in it overall, and it capped off the trilogy pretty well. You had a few flashes of both previous matches in the fight. We saw DC land that overhand off the clinch a few times. We were treated to an eye poke from each fighter, and we saw Miocic land that beautiful clean body shot and then he went to knock DC down as well. It was just a brilliant and entertaining end to the trilogy. And a big thing to talk about here, as I've just mentioned, is the eye poke. I mean, DC suffered a torn cornea from a bad eye poke that landed by Stipe, which was awful to see and could well have changed the course of the matchup. If I'm honest, I think that Miocic had the fight anyway. I think he was winning, but there's no doubt like that something like that could cause massive problems during the fight. Yeah. And I've read that DC and O'Malley, I said, are suspended both till I think it's the 12th of February next year to recover, which is crazy. But it's also worth noting, Stipe also suffered an eye injury, and I think he has to get clearance by the 30th of September. So I'm not just saying that, obviously, the eye poke changed everything, but it's worth noting that both guys were at fault for it. It's not just DC, Miocic landing it. Third time lucky. It's that's what I mean. It's not just Miocic's eye poke that caused the issue. There was a few throughout the fight, and Miocic just landed worse. I mean, The big thing to talk about with that though is how do we get over this? Because for me, warnings aren't enough. You don't need to stick your fingers out when getting your range. So anytime I box or I shadow spar, my guard is kept up and my fists are clenched. I don't see the issue really in how you can do that so much. I mean, I get that people fight differently, but come on, those eye pokes have to be avoided in all circumstances. And not just because of the fight itself, but the fighter's safety. It's not just about, oh, it could ruin the outcome of the match. It could ruin a fighter's career. The permanent damage that it can cause is just ridiculous. And for me, there needs to be serious repercussions if a fighter does so, because maybe we could adapt the gloves and that could help. But for me, if fingers are being shown very obviously, I think taking a point needs to happen. Not a fighter can't have four warnings about it. They need to say maybe one warning instantly of, if I see them fingers out again, you're getting a point taken away. Because I don't know necessarily if that is going to go down well. I don't know if we can alter the gloves. But for me, I just hate to see it.
For me, as you've seen there, something funny about that. I've seen a post. Do you know how Muay Thai changed the gloves to MMA? Mm-hmm. And there's still eye pokes going on?
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that's what I mean is, I get that you might not want to have your guard up all the time with a clenched fist. People fight differently. Even look at McGregor's stance.
Yeah,
like his hand's always out. But if your hand is going near someone else's face and you've still got your hand out as a big palm, then if you poke your opponent in the eye, I think it's got to be a point. It can't just be a break. There's got to be a repercussion for it, because you can get I think it's, isn't it when southpaws fight orthodox people? They really struggle with kicking them in the nuts.
Yeah.
Fair enough, because of the stances you're going for. But as I said, with an eye poke, that's not necessarily the stance you're going for. That's more, for me, that's more clumsy and more dangerous.
I'm just thinking, like, I get like, being a fighter, I get, like, your range, you want to, like, count your range out, you want to parry and stuff like that. So maybe you've got your hands out, you know what I mean? Like, just the range.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I totally agree. Eye pokes are dangerous.
Yeah.
Let's
talk about a more joyful thing with it. The fight all in all, because it was a great performance by both guys, and they were both deserving of the title. It's just that Miocic wanted it more. He performed great, and the biggest thing for me was when he hurt DC bad. He clipped Cormier and sent him into the cage, kind of dropped. So he fell back into the cage. It wasn't a clean fall down, but he was definitely hurt. He wasn't able to finish things because Daniel literally held on for his life. He really kept that grasp tight. But I thought it was interesting to see that when DC went back to his corner, he asked his corner if he dropped. He said, did I drop or did my legs go or something? He asked if he went out. So it's clear that he wasn't all there at that point. And from there on, he just couldn't do enough to beat the champion. But let's ask, what is next then? So I don't think DC is retired, as we were talking about. He may well be.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I still see him fighting in the future. I see him getting a super fight or going for a title again. I don't know. But if he has retired, I wish him well, and I'd like to thank DC for everything he's done for the sport. And there is no doubt that he's a future Hall of Famer and will go down as one of the sport's greatest. But for Miocic, I think now he faces Ngannou or Jones for the title.
100%, yeah.
Because I'd like either fight. I think Ngannou deserves it, and I think he's changed since their last fight. However, Jones versus Miocic is one of the biggest fights of all time. I mean, once more, it's so worthy of happening that I just think this might be the next fight as well. We've seen the idea that Jones is going to... he's relinquished the light heavyweight title. Yeah. He'll move up. And as I said, just overall, I don't really see a way that this fight probably won't not go ahead now. Miocic Jones offers so much. Miocic, there's no doubt he could KO Jones and obviously give Jones his first loss in the sense of not through disqualification, give him his first outright loss. Then equally, Jones would be looking at the fights that Cormier had with Miocic and thinking, what can I do better than DC? Because I've beat DC twice.
I think he's too fast, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be so interesting. I really hope that fight is made somewhere down the line.
The headline's Jones versus Stipe. Oh my god.
Bloody hell. Please take my money.
Even Jones versus Francis.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. If that happens. And with Jones relinquishing the title, I think that will happen in the future as well. Oh. But that is our recap of UFC 252 completed, and we are ready to move on. So let's talk about what is next. A decent weekend card back at the UFC Apex, UFC Fight Night, Munoz versus Edgar. What do you think about this card, mate?
Munoz, like his last, was that speculate his last fight against Cody Garbrandt?
So that was his last win, I believe.
Last win, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, what a performance that was. And, well, you're right to note that because that was basically the fight that put him on the radar.
Yeah.
Like he obviously had some fights before that, but that was the one which really sent the world of MMA knowing who he was. I mean, before we go on to break down that fight, let's talk about another fight that's lower on the card. It's not the main or the co-main, but I want to shine some light on another fight which I think is closing the prelims when Kazakhstan's Maria Agapova takes on Shayna Dobson. Now, I like the look of Agapova a lot. She's a flyweight fighter who's currently 9-1, and that's just 23 years old. Now, she comes up against Shayna Dobson, who's 31 and a record of 3-4.
Yeah,
so there's a few things I want to note here. Firstly, if Agapova loses, then I know absolutely nothing about this sport and I will retire at the very start of my career. But her fight against Hannah Seifers was an absolute thing of beauty. If you have UFC Fight Pass, please go on there and watch that fight because Agapova looked absolutely incredible all around. She looks so tall for the division, despite the fact she's 5'6". So she's only an inch taller than Dobson, but it's the way she's built. She's tall and she's skinny with fantastic kickboxing skills. I just can't wait. I genuinely can't wait to see her in action again because she's very, very entertaining. She does, however, come up against Shayna Dobson, and the reason I say I will retire is that Dobson is 3-4.
Yeah, she lost the last fight, didn't she?
Yeah, this is a crazy matchup to make. 9-1 versus the 3-4 is very outmatched. So, don't get me wrong, if Dobson beats her, I think it's a big fault of the UFC, though, because the UFC just put on a massive stamp on what would have been a great prospect for the sport. I said, if Agapova loses to a 3-4 fighter, that doesn't look great. Because I mean, Dobson's last loss came by KO to Priscilla Cachera. And I see the same happening this weekend. It might not be the clean KO finish that Cachera got, but I think maybe we'll see her work into the body a bit. And I think we'll probably see a kick that puts Dobson out. I think either to the body or to the head. I think I see Agapova going 10-1 on Saturday night. And if she doesn't, then I will be so annoyed just because I see Agapova as a rising star for sport. We discussed this the other day that we like to see matchups that make sense. We like to see matchups that move things forward. And the only thing I see moving forward here is Agapova. Because if Dobson wins it, I still think she's got so much more to do. Whereas Agapova, I think, can really start pushing herself and cementing herself as a great fighter because she's 10-1. She would go, 10-1. And that's solid. Very, very solid.
Well, I've got my head now is like you're retiring.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that I make loads of money before that then. Before Saturday night, I'm going to have to win the lottery. Well, let's move on to our co-main event. OSP returning back to light heavyweight to face the rising star, Alonzo Menifield. Now, this fight should deliver. This will be a real test of two dangerous finishers at £205. Menifield is a former college American football linebacker who has serious, serious power in his hands. I think all of his 9 wins are finishes, with 8 of those as KOs or TKOs. So he is definitely not a guy that you want to throw hands with. However, OSP has made his name finishing people too. With his OSP choke, or also known as the Von Flu choke, he can always seem to land that, or he throws an incredible left high kick as well. Just because of his stance and the way he fights, he can really disguise that well, and that puts people out. So either way, I see a finish going down here. Menifield had a hard fight last time out because he lost to Devin Clark, I think it was, and he had Clark hurt a few times, but overall he just couldn't cut it against Clark's wrestling, and overall he just took a very disappointing loss. He's one of them guys who is so jacked and ripped that he hasn't left a lot of room for his fitness. So
cardio. Yeah.
Exactly. When you're that muscular, as you're not, you tend to build up a buildup of lactic acid, which means that you generally cramp up easier and your stamina just isn't as good compared to those guys who are slimmer. So the major advantage obviously you get from that is how hard you can bloody hit someone.
Yeah.
You can literally take a guy's head off and just render anyone unconscious, because he, as I said, if you watch even the way his chest is formed, he's so heavy in his pecs that it's not necessarily leaving a lot of room to kind of, as I said, have your stamina in there, but it leaves a lot of room for you to swing a fucking punch.
Yeah, he's the lad's gone.
Exactly. And also, there's a few times where OSP has been KO'd clean.
Yeah.
So we may see this again. But Karen?
Sorry, mate. Did he lose his last fight to Ben Rothwell by decision?
Yes, he did. And that was the fight at heavyweight where he moved up to heavyweight to make his debut there. And I was so disappointed in that, because I thought OSP would look phenomenal at heavyweight. I thought he was going to basically revive his career a bit. I thought he'd move up there, he would look agile for the division, and generally just be dangerous. And in that fight, I didn't think he offered anything. Yeah. I think Rothwell could control him throughout. I think Rothwell nearly had him knocked out a few times as well. So I think that was a bit of a letdown. So now that he's moving back down again, I kind of just, I'm a little bit uninterested in what OSP is doing at the moment. But it's worth noting how experienced he actually is. Definitely. And this is really going to be a matchup for me of an unexperienced killer versus an experienced veteran of the sport.
Yeah, the record says it all. It's 24-14 for OSP and Menifield
9-1, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, will he be able to catch Menifield out and utilise his experience and grappling to get the win? Or will Menifield be able to land that one-punch KO knockout that just finishes the fight early on? And if I'm honest, my bet is going to be on the latter. I think OSP's susceptible to getting a big punch landed on him, because I don't think his defence is phenomenal. And I think that potentially Menifield's going to go in there. After his last fight with Clark, that wasn't too long ago. I don't think he's going to have changed his attitude to fighting that much yet. So I still think he's going to go in there and look for the finish early on, and I think he might get it. Well, let's move on to our final fight of the night, the main event bout between Pedro Munhoz and Frankie Edgar. Now, I could be wrong, but I believe this is Edgar's debut at 135 pounds, isn't it? I think so. I've tried to check the past, the history of it, but I think this might be his 135-pound debut. And if it is, it's a fight I cannot wait for. I think, like Jose Aldo, Edgar benefits the 135-pound division massively, and he adds some spice to what is an already cracking roster there. I think he was a bit compromised at 145 pounds because he just wasn't big enough for the featherweight division. His grappling was incredible, but he struggled with the range against guys like Holloway, who I think 6 foot.
Yeah.
So I think 135 pounds suits Edgar much better. And as for Munhoz, he really needs to... He put himself on the radar when he KO'd Garbrandt. Prior to his last fight against Aljamain Sterling, he was on a 3-fight win streak, and he was settling himself as one of the better guys in the division. He did have a knockback against Sterling because he couldn't really do much in that fight. But now he gets a chance to welcome the answer to the bantamweight division. And he gets a chance to get potentially a great win over one of the sport's longest serving talents. And I think, could be wrong here as well, but I think Edgar has spent the most time in the UFC division in the octagon. So if so, that's what I mean. If Munoz can get the win there, he's got the win over a fantastic guy. Yeah. And also, what we spoke about before is, as we said, we don't like fights that offer nothing. That make no sense. They're just there. They just happen. But they don't really move anything in the division. Now, this is why I like this fight, because it keeps the division on its toes. Neither of these guys are going to get a title shot with a win here. But it definitely puts them in the picture where they're one or two fights away from the title, in my opinion anyway. I think this is the ranked sixth guy versus an unranked guy.
And Munoz says he wants the title shot after this fight.
Does he? Well,
yeah.
I don't think you can argue. I don't think he can call for that. In my opinion, don't get me wrong, you get a great win over Edgar.
Yeah.
But with the likes of Aljamain Sterling in there, I mean, for me, he's next, but I know they've spoken about having other people in there. I don't think Munoz will get the title shot after this. I will be very surprised if he does, because as I said, he was on a 3-fight win streak. But if you lose a fight and then win a fight and get a title shot, for me, that's not right. And especially, unfortunately, for a name like Munoz, I don't think he offers enough that the UFC are going to want to invest that into him.
Yeah.
I think he's just kind of calling for that fight because he thinks he deserves it. Whereas you've got to look at the harsh reality of the UFC sometimes. I think it was Jose Aldo we were talking about, where it was something like in his last 6 fights he'd won 2 and he got the title shot. I mean, that's not right by any means. No. But it's Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
So you see kind of why they put Jan and Aldo together, because so many people are going to watch that fight. Now, if I'm honest, I think if you put Jan versus Munoz next, people don't care. People won't want that fight yet.
No, you're right.
There's much better fights to make in the bantamweight division at this current time. But as I said, I do like this fight because it keeps on his toes. I think Edgar gets the victory here, though, because I think he utilises grappling and all-round experience here to catch Munoz out and ride out a unanimous decision over 5 rounds, because we know Edgar can do that. Edgar's stamina and his gas tank is scarily good. However, Munoz does obviously have the power, so we may also see Frankie get clipped. And depending on how much the weight cut is taken out of him, that could cause some big issues. So I think there's a lot at risk in this fight, and I think overall this fight's going to offer something good.
Yeah.
If it's across 5 rounds, then we might see Frankie Edgar dominate at bantamweight. We might see him put on a great performance. But if not, we're likely to see a knockout from one of these guys early on. And that is also exciting. So I think this fight kind of, regardless of the way it goes, offers something good. I don't think it offers necessarily a boring fight, and I think it offers a nice picture to the 135-pound division.
Yeah.
But
I would love to see, if Frankie Edgar won, I would love to see Jose Aldo versus Frankie Edgar again. Because I went to a decision.
At bantamweight.
Yeah.
At bantamweight, that'd be a fantastic fight. And also, yeah. I agree with you, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that, obviously, Aldo coming off his championship loss, why not? Why not have these guys run it back? I mean, that's a main event spot there, or potentially co-main on a unnumbered card.
There you go.
So I like that. I think that's a great fight. Great shout. And as I said, at £135 as well, that's why it offers something different. We've seen the fight happen before. We haven't seen it at this weight. And likely the winner of that fight then gets another shot. So I like that. But that is our breakdown of this weekend's UFC card complete. But before we move on to our fight announcements, I'd like to shine some more Bellator bouts that are coming up. I think they're coming up tomorrow or tonight if you're listening on Friday. So firstly, the clash of two fantastic bantamweight fighters in the UFC veteran Eric Perez taking on Canada's Josh Hill. Eric Perez is a solid veteran of the sport who will be wanting a Bellator title underneath him in the near future. However, Hill is 19-3. And is one of the bantamweight division's top talents across the entire sport, in my opinion. I said 19-3. Not many people know who he is, but with that type of record, you will know soon. I think the winner of this fight will face the champion somewhere down the line, as next up, Patchy Mix and Juan Archuleta face each other for the 135-pound title in September. So I think it's rumoured that Sergio Pettis is going to get the winner of that fight. And then I think the winner of this fight between Josh Hill and Eric Perez may either face the loser of Mix versus Archuleta, or potentially they get the champion next. So it's definitely not a fight to miss, because these two guys will potentially be the future Bellator bantamweight champions. And as I said, with the record they've got and the history they've got, it's definitely a fight to watch.
That's a crazy record. What was that? 19-3.
19-3 for Josh Hill. Indeed, whoa. Yeah. He fought in a promotion called TKO. It was a Canadian promotion, but overall, he, as I said, he looks very, very good all around. The second bout, though, I'd like to shine upon is the current Bellator double champ, Ryan Bader, versus the Fedor team prospect, Vadim Nemkov. Jeez. I think, yeah, this Bellator have put on a fantastic match here because in the past, you could have criticised their title fights for them being slightly mismatched. I mean, Bader came into the heavyweight Grand Prix tournament as an underdog, I think, because he was smaller. But his record is 27-5, and he's one of the younger heavyweights that Bellator have signed. So he always had an advantage to win that, in my opinion. People like Fedor and Rampage and Chael at this point, unfortunately, weren't going to cut it at that level. But now, he's facing out a guy who's 10 years younger than him with an 11-2 record. So this is genuinely one of those fights that's going to be very competitive. Guy, yeah, and I think it's going to be competitive for both guys and offers a great future for the division. If Nemkov wins, I said he's a Fedor team prospect. He's going to be a new champion, 12-2, at the age of 28 years old. He's going to be a guy that eyes are going to be on. And yeah. Equally, Bader will stay the heavyweight champion at that stage. So Bader doesn't lose everything there. However, if Bader wins 28-5 against guys like this, he could really be one of Bellator's best ever signings. As I said, 28-5, double champ. He might retire as the double champ. I think he's 37 now. So if he can do that, he will really start capping off his MMA career fine. Really, really fine. Now, we have a few fight announcements to talk about, don't we? Wow. So, I mean, let's go straight ahead with John Jones vacating the title and Jan Blachowicz versus Dominic Reyes set for September the 26th for the light heavyweight title. What do you think about this announcement?
I would love to see Dominic versus Jones again. I think everyone would love to see that again.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's not going to happen, though, is it?
I know.
That's why that announcement was so shocking, because it was like, shit.
Do you reckon UFC waited for Jones to go for that rematch again?
Potentially. I think what happened with this fight as well is I think Jones likes the idea of moving up now, getting guys like... I think Miocic is possibly the greatest heavyweight of all time. However, I do think Jones offers him a very, very tough matchup because I think Cormier exposed Miocic a bit. And even in their three fights, we still saw Miocic have a few flaws in his game.
Yeah.
And as you said, John is so fast. So I think John might be looking at this going, well, the light heavyweight division is getting very dangerous. And he's had a few, three now fights where he's been a little bit risky. Where you think, ooh, he could have lost that.
Yeah.
Now that he's losing his touch there, I think he's going to want to move up, try and take the title early, maybe beat Miocic, beat a guy like Ngannou, and then maybe call it a day. Because if he can do that, and I think he's definitely capable of doing it, I think then he goes down as possibly the GOAT. Because Ngannou as well, once more, fantastic. The power he has is scary. But John is so fast and so technical.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Ngannou doesn't have that. Ngannou has that raw power. And yes, as I said, he's going to be hard to dodge and he's so powerful. But the way Jones fights, I think he could get a win over Miocic and Ngannou. And I think that's kind of why he's seeing that move. Because if not, he's facing guys at light heavyweight who are a little bit faster and there's much more range at light heavyweight in terms of who he could fight. So potentially he likes the idea of kind of coming against guys who might be a little bit slower than him.
Yeah.
And then the only other guy, I guess, there who offers the scary fight is Curtis Blaydes. And Curtis Blaydes' wrestling is scarily good. But so's John Jones. John Jones is so dominant when he wants to be. And I think maybe he struggles against a guy like Blaydes in terms of the wrestling ability. But I don't think you could say that John's wrestling is bad in any way, shape or form. So that's what I mean. I think the future of John Jones at heavyweight is brighter than the future of John Jones at light heavyweight. I think there's less risk at heavyweight. Despite the power, I think there's three very winnable fights.
Yeah.
Whereas at light heavyweight, I think you start to question if he's going to get clipped. So we'll see. But it's also worth noting, someone returning at light heavyweight, Anthony Rumble Johnson, has been cleared by USADA and he's looking to make a return.
Woohoo!
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, that is, once more, incredible. That's one of, these are one of them announcements where you just go, oh, I needed that. That's what I want to hear. Because there's no doubt, even if Rumble Johnson comes back and does gets knocked out, you still will watch the fight. You want to see Rumble Johnson return.
Yeah.
And the same went for Gustafsson at heavyweight. Yes, he went and lost it, but this, it was still so interesting to see. So just to have Rumble Johnson back, especially returning at light heavyweight as well, that's what I want to see. I wouldn't have been, if he had returned at heavyweight, I wouldn't have been surprised. But I think it's a nice risk taking that you're going to light heavy because he's such a big guy. And he was doing his bodybuilding, or I think that's what he went into, a career in bodybuilding for a little while. So now that he's stopped doing that, as I said, to cut yourself to light heavy when you're such a big guy, you're putting your cards on the table and you're putting a risk out there. And that's why it's also really interesting, because Rumble Johnson at light heavyweight just offers something else as well. Something really interesting. And that's a fighter who I would like to see most fighters in that division face. Just because he really can put anyone out.
Who do you reckon you'll fight? That's a hard question.
It's a very, very hard question. Do you know what I would like to see? I would like to see Jimmy Manuel return again.
Oh, that'll be a good fight.
Against Rumble. They fought before and Rumble KO'd him. But Manuel has always said that he would he's always hinting this idea of returning. So for me, why not, back in, say, next March, when hopefully everything has calmed down with the coronavirus and there's more events going on, that is when we have UFC London. So give me Jimmy Manua versus Rumble Johnson in the co-main event. Why not? It's a very bold shout, and I don't think the UFC will do it just because it's two returning fighters. But still, we don't see that happen a lot, so why not give it to us now? Why not give us something where we go, shit, this is, wow, someone's going out, and someone's going to go back into retirement. It really puts some risks out there. However, once more, if that fight doesn't happen, I don't know who will see Rumble face first. I think they're going to want to push Rumble for a decent matchup. I think they're not going to want to put him in there against someone who will potentially clean him right after his return. I think the same went for the Gustafsson-Verdun match. I thought Gustafsson was going to win that. And I think the UFC thought that too. So I don't think they're going to offer Rumble one of the hardest fights out there. But I think they will offer him someone high up in light heavyweight. I think, potentially, we might see him get Glover Teixeira. I think Glover's ranked fourth at the moment. And I can see that fight being made. Because for me, Rumble can definitely beat Glover, but equally, Glover's a good opponent and he's ranked high. So they kind of chuck him straight into the picture.
Title. Do you reckon he will go straight into, like, if he wins, like, two, three fights, he'll go straight for title?
Yeah, I totally. I don't think he's going to stay around for that long, so I think if he's going to stay around, he's going to want a title. And I really think, as I said, that would be my idea of what's going to happen with him. I think, despite I would like, obviously, Manoa to return, I think he comes back against Teixeira. I think if he beats Teixeira, which he can definitely knock him out, I think then he gets either the title next, maybe the winner of Anthony Smith versus Alexander Rakic. But if not, I think Rumble Johnson gets Teixeira, maybe Thiago Santos next, maybe, or beats Teixeira and then faces the winner of Reyes versus Blachowicz. Because let's be honest, even Reyes Blachowicz, they might win against Rumble, but they've got a hard fight on their hands if he comes up against them.
I can't wait to see him.
The UFC might like that idea as well, that, ooh, we've had Rumble out for a few years, but everyone knows who he is. What if he takes the light heavyweight title for a little while? It's a nice picture. So we will really have to see. But for now, that is all we have time for. We've nearly done another hour again. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Ultimate MMA Podcast, everyone. Make sure to like, listen, and subscribe to us. And be sure to tune in next week, where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card. And then we'll preview the next card, which takes place on the 29th of August, where Anthony Smith and Alexander Rakic meet in the main event. That is also a fight that I love. I really am looking forward to seeing who wins that, because I think both them guys are fantastic fighters, and if they win that, I think they're in the top five picture for maybe a title shot in the near future. So I have been your host, Jake Jones, and I want to say a massive thank you to our co-host this week, Sean Gilley, for joining us again. I hope you recover well, my friend. And I
thank you very much.
And we will always be here if you're sidelined for a while, because let's keep cracking these podcasts out. We're going to take advantage of the fact that you might not be getting back to training for a little while, so we'll get as many pods as we can out in that time. But genuinely, as I said, mate, recover well. Anything you need, let us know. It was our pleasure, and we look forward to next weekend's Ultimate MMA podcast. Stay safe out there, guys.